The cool thing, and probably one of the most inclusive things about cycling, is there really is something for everybody. You know, like you could enter and just want to get increase your fitness and go for your rides, and you can join a group ride, and you can find a level that appropriately challenges you, where you feel comfortable and you feel like you're being pushed.
Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by the Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Virago Pod. This is Taylor here. Emily is here as well. Hi, Emily.
Hey.
Happy New Year, everyone. I hope that you all had a wonderful holiday. We're excited to continue to make content. And with that, our first podcast of 2021 is a really awesome interview that we did with a cyclist, Leia Thomas. Leia is someone who has a super interesting story, being that she didn't exactly cycle in college and go the traditional sports route as you see in the States, where you start a sport in high school and then you go to college and then you go professional if you're good enough. No, Leia began cycling in 2013 after she graduated from college and is now literally one of the elite cyclists in the world. She is currently cycling in Europe with a professional team called Movie Stars. And Leia shares her entire journey and how she shifted from teaching after college into the world of professional cycling. And I'm so excited to share her journey with you, especially if we have any women out there who have decided maybe not to take a traditional path and follow their wildest dreams instead. I think Leia is a great representative of that. And also women who want to get involved in cycling. This is a sport that I feel is very, very underrated. So Leia gives some really good tips on how to get involved with the sport if that's something that you're interested in doing as well.
Yeah, Taylor and I obviously both played volleyball. So a lot of times I feel like our experiences and our stories on our podcast come from a very team sport driven volleyball mindset. And it was really nice having this different perspective. And I look forward to highlighting more different sports that we just don't really personally know about. And you'll be able to tell from some of our questions as we're learning more about the sport on today's podcast.
Yeah, we realize that there are definitely a lot of cycling terms that we did not understand during the interview and maybe still need to clarify with Leia about, but hey, we're open and we're learning, and really, really excited that Leia took the time to share her story and to share this awesome sport with us. With that said, we do have a few announcements before we begin today. One being that we are holding wellness classes, as I like to call them. Actually, you know what? I don't like the term wellness because wellness is just too like mainstream. Let's call them well-being classes.
Yeah.
So this is like fitness classes, yoga and mindfulness classes, and just like mental health check-ins. I really, really don't think that we're moving, quote unquote, into the fitness industry. That's not it at all. We just wanted to have fun classes on the weekends and maybe sprinkled throughout the week that our community can come to and where they can connect and build relationships with other sportswomen in a really fun and inclusive and welcoming environment. So this weekend we have Casey DiNardo, who is a former Team USA field hockey athlete. She'll be hosting Saturday morning fitness classes with us all of January, all of February, and if it goes well enough, you know, for forever, let's hope. And she's a certified professional trainer now. She's training people over in Arlington, Virginia these days. So she knows her stuff. And I mean, she was an extraordinary athlete. And then we also have a yoga instructor who we'll be working with on Sunday mornings. So and that will be with Callie. So you can choose which class to come to. They're $10 a pop. Feel free to tell your friends about it, and we will have registration links up soon. Hi, Leia. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Welcome to Virago Pod.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. So I'm going to hop straight into this interview. And the first question I want to ask you is, what about cycling brings you joy?
Cycling is for so many reasons, but really, I think the thing that keeps drawing me back to it is twofold. The first thing is it gives you a sense of freedom. You're able to go pretty far on your bike. You have the wind on your face. You generally have beautiful landscapes around you. And it's kind of a meditative experience in a way. Mm. And then the second thing is that it really allows myself to push and to really find out where my boundaries are. And figuring that out also gives me a sense of joy and satisfaction.
That sounds awesome. I have very limited experience cycling. I think my favorite bike ride, which I don't even know if that's the terminology I should use, but my favorite bike ride I ever took was when I was on a trip in Italy, and I think we biked like, I don't know, 30 or something miles in Rome once when I was visiting, and parts were hilly, but we definitely took our time. So yeah, just like the wind in your hair and the scenery, I can totally, totally relate to that just from that one experience. And I wanted to ask you, what is your favorite place or favorite roads or favorite area in the United States to cycle in?
That's a great question. I've been fortunate enough to ride throughout a lot of the US, and so many places are beautiful. And my friends joke because pretty much everywhere I go, I say, oh, I should move here. Oh, I should move here. And I just kind of fall in love with all these different towns that I've gotten to see in the US through racing. But then I come back home and I live in the southern part of the Bay Area, about like an hour and 20 minutes south of San Francisco, kind of nestled in the mountains there. Okay. And every time I come home, I think, no, this is absolutely the best place to ride your bike. I'm so lucky. And so my answer would have to be here. The Bay Area really is a spectacular place to ride. And we're so fortunate to be able to have some really quiet roads, even though we're in obviously a very populated area. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. And I absolutely love being home and being here.
I feel like that is an answer I expected from you, because as soon as I learned out you were from that area, I was like, oh, the rolling hills, the wine country, the water, like a cyclist's dream. Okay.
So, yeah. Wait, can I add one thing to that?
Sure. Yeah.
I think something that's really special about here that makes it so unique and mostly why I really love it is that there's so much diversity in the landscapes. Like on any one ride, when you're in other parts of the country, it's kind of monotonous and stays the same the whole way. And it might be really beautiful still, you know, but you kind of get the same thing. Versus here, you bike and at the beginning you're in an oak forest and then you're in the redwood trees and then you're at the ocean and then you can see either farm fields or vineyards all on the same ride. And I think that's pretty special.
Oh, yeah. And how far is like a normal ride for you?
I would say a normal ride is anywhere from 30 miles to 100 miles. And it really depends on the day. But probably averaging somewhere between, I do two long rides a week, so 80 to 100 miles. And then I do some, the rest of the week is about 30 miles each time.
Wow. And how long does it take for like the 80 to 100 miles for you?
5 to 6 hours, depending on how hilly it is. That makes a huge difference in how long a ride is going to take.
Wow. That just sounds like an awesome way to spend a morning, like a beautiful morning on a bike, just riding through all of these different landscapes. It just sounds so relaxing. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about your cycling background, Leia, and how you came to be where you are today. So I was reading up on you, and I know that you won your first race in 2013, and now you have the opportunity to ride all over the world. So I wanted to ask you how you began your journey in cycling and what goals you have for your future.
Sure. I ended up taking a job teaching on the Navajo Reservation. I was hired to teach sixth grade science, and I had this grand idea in my head that as a first year teacher, I'm living kind of in the middle of nowhere. We were maybe 2 hours east of Flagstaff, Arizona, and about an hour west of Gallup, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I had this idea that I would drive to Gallup and go swim after school. And I was going to do these triathlons and it was going to be awesome. And I quickly learned that I did not have enough time for that. Mm-hmm. And I was overwhelmed with figuring out my classroom and figuring out the curriculum and how everything was going to fit together. And my boyfriend at the time was really into cycling and bike racing. And so he kind of encouraged me to just ride my bike, and I would ride up and down the interstate. Actually, it was the only, there was maybe two other roads I could ride on that were paved. Mm-hmm. And so I'd bike up and down the highway, and I entered my first race with his encouragement. And like you said, I won every stage. And that kind of gave me some confidence to think, I like this and I'm good at it. Let's see what happens. And kind of one thing led to another. And I just kept trying to push myself. And then I found myself, you know, racing for some of the best teams in the world and spending most of my time in Europe and getting to represent the United States. So that was pretty cool.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So that was a very brief, like, overview of how you got
life story. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, you know, that probably doesn't encompass all of the journey, because so I'm just thinking, like, I know that a lot of the narrative surrounding professional athletes, at least in America, includes some kind of like traditional like NCAA or like college sport experience. And, you know, you don't really have that traditional background that a lot of professional athletes, I feel, have, you know, if you follow, like the U.S. women's national team, for example, like most of the soccer players on there, they went to college like at some school in the States. And with cycling, I feel like that's a little bit different to see, you know, for people to go play professionally or cycle professionally. That doesn't mean that they necessarily competed in college. So I was just wondering, like, did you ever think, you know, while you were riding on that interstate in Arizona, just, you know, for leisure, did you ever think that you would be competing with USA Cycling and racing against the top athletes in the world?
At the time, absolutely not. It was something that I just kind of became moderately obsessed with. I just really loved it, and I enjoyed the challenge it represented to me. And, you know, I look back at that first race and I did well. And I think about, you know, where would I be if I had finished last? You know, would I have continued to pursue this path? And over the years, I've really developed so much respect for people who do things, and they're not the people who win. They're the people who really push themselves, and they push themselves so much that just finishing was a huge accomplishment. And I just think that context is really important to remember and kind of pushes me a little bit more in cycling.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And
I've got a quick question, actually. So I know you mentioned you did triathlons also, and I've done a very short local, like raising money for charity type one in my hometown. Is it a standard that lots of cyclists also do triathlons, or that many triathlon athletes also do cyclists? Like, is it one way more goes, like, do you know, does that make sense? Is it reciprocal, or is there one that much more commonly does the other?
I don't know if this is like a good analogy or not. I kind of feel like there's a little bit of competition between the two.
That's what I was wondering.
Kind of like, if you're a triathlete, you kind of, I don't know, you might have some things to joke about cyclists. And if you're a cyclist, you have some things to joke about with triathlon, just because they are so different, you know, like people who do Ironmans and stuff are riding for so long. And the way you go about completing a triathlon is so different from winning a bike race where, you know, you're with so many other people and there's crashing and there's like all this chaos going on. And it's a little bit like comparing gymnastics and cheerleading, right. You know, like there's this inner war.
Yeah. And, you know, Leah, I actually wanted to ask, you know, how would you describe cycling culture?
I guess I'll talk a little bit about, it's like not while you're racing culture, just like the day in, day out cycling culture.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time spent at a coffee shop. There's a lot of, I went for my ride and now I'm going to relax. And people find these coffee shops with like these really like high quality coffee beverages, and they hang out and they talk with their friends and they talk about their life and talk about what's going on with their team and talk about stuff with the Peloton, gossip a little bit. And it's interesting because that's something I actually don't partake in too much. I find it, I don't know, when I'm done with my bike ride, the last thing I want to do is sit even longer. But it is a very common thing to do. And even during bike rides, to stop at a coffee shop and take a break and relax and have a snack and hang out with your friends.
Oh, that's so interesting. So, and what about racing culture? Because I'm assuming people don't stop for coffee and snack
at
a race.
I don't know. I find racing culture, like even within the women's Peloton, like, you're all competitors, but I find before the race, for the most part, people are friendly and encouraging without being like, you know, you're still competitive. There's a sense maybe of camaraderie within that, okay. That we're all kind of marching into battle and we're going to see who's the last one standing.
Yeah. So I have to ask, are your races, are they co-ed?
They are trying to get more races going at the same time as the men's race. That's something that women's cycling is really fighting for. So there's some pretty major men's races. Like there's a spring classic called Paris-Roubaix, and it's incredibly long. It's like a 7 or 8 hour race, and it's on these like giant, like horrendously bumpy cobblestones. And it's just like this war of attrition. And this past season, we were supposed to do our first version of Paris-Roubaix, and it got canceled, unfortunately, because of COVID. But they're trying to create men's races and women's races, but they're never together.
Gotcha. Okay.
Always race separately.
Okay. So, and I want to go back to this kind of traditional narrative that so many sports have, where you follow a certain path and that's how you become one of the great. And I know for you and for many athletes, that's not the path. But with cycling, it seems like maybe even more so. And this other thing that came up when I was thinking about cycling is that there doesn't seem to be any kind of like age barriers that might exist within other sports. And this is also maybe untraditional. So what would you say to someone who wants to start cycling, but maybe thinks that they're too old or, you know, have peaked athletically and that their time has passed?
Absolutely. So the cool thing, if you look at the women's Peloton, is, you know, the best rider in the world right now, her name is Annemiek van Vleuten, and she is going to be 38 next year. And if you look at the last Olympics, in the time trial, Kristen Armstrong won in her low 40s, and it was her third gold medal in that event. And you can look around and you can see success at many different ages. And I think it's kind of thought that the peak age for a woman cyclist is somewhere in their mid-30s, by the time everything develops. But that said, like anybody who wants to enter the sport, the cool thing and probably one of the most inclusive things about cycling is there really is something for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could enter and just want to increase your fitness and go for your rides, and you can join a group ride and you can find a level that appropriately challenges you, where you feel comfortable and you feel like you're being pushed, and build friendships along the way. You can also, lots of regions have local racing. And what's cool about local racing is, like, if you're a little bit older, once you're over 35, they have masters racing. So you can race within your age group, and you're kind of more on an equal playing field. So there's a little bit of ways that everybody can participate. What's unique about cycling in the US is that we don't really have a solid junior program. So like you said, we don't really have a pathway where you start riding from when you're really young. And then by the time you're right out of college, you're racing professionally. So a lot of women cyclists found cycling in college or right after college while they were studying, maybe getting a master's or something, and then switched career paths.
Yeah. And I think that's so cool too, that they were able to find the sport later in life, because I feel like there is, I don't know, there's just this misconception after you graduate college, at least maybe for me, because I was a college athlete, and I know a lot of others who, you know, hung the jersey up and are still today struggling to find rhythm with their exercise and fitness routines, but still crave, you know, the competitive draw of sports. And it seems like cycling is, it's kind of like an underrated sport, I would say, in a lot of ways, because a lot of people don't really know how to get started, you know, what bike to buy, what, where to find more information about races. So thank you for sharing some more information on that.
And actually, I don't even know if I wanted to get, like, I'm like, oh, I think I would actually love this. Like, should I go to a local bike shop, or like, where is there any resources you can recommend of like, hey, this is a great place to get started?
Yeah, I think you should definitely go to a local bike shop, and they can kind of direct you to where you are, or like to what is provided in your area. So like, for example, if you lived in the South Bay and somebody said, how do I get started? Like, I want to join a group ride. You know, generally on the web, there's kind of a list of different group rides you can do with kind of different levels of intensity. So if you're just starting, you go on the really easy one, there's generally a ride leader there who is looking for new people who can help, you know, point you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. What's really special about cycling is it really is a very social sport. You know, you can't be going as hard as you can for 5 hours. So there's moments where you're pedaling along and you're talking with the people next to you 4 or 5 hours day in and day out and week after week after week. And obviously you don't have to ride that long, mm-hmm. but the point is you build these really interesting, strong friendships just because of the time you've spent together and the challenges you face together. And that's also really rewarding and kind of what draws me into cycling.
Yeah. I think that's good to touch on too, because I feel like as someone who has not gotten into cycling whatsoever, like can't even sit on a stationary bike for ever in the gym, like biking is not my thing. But like, I would think incorrectly that cycling is a very individual sport, but it sounds to me that it's quite the opposite. So maybe someone who, you know, is looking to get involved in competing after sport, maybe just because you want your fitness to, you know, improve, or if you want to find a way to do everything and make, you know, friendships, this is a really good option. But you, Leia, have taken it to the next level. All right. So like, you're traveling everywhere. Yeah. You're an elite cyclist. So what's going on in your life? Like for the next year, you know, what are your big races? What teams are you going to be with? How does that look for you?
Yeah, this next year will be pretty interesting. So I'll leave to go back to Europe in 3 weeks or so. So I spend pretty much normally February this year, a little earlier through September. I live in Girona in Spain, and I kind of base myself out of there and have an apartment, and that's pretty much becomes my home for most of the year. And then from there, we travel to big races. And in the spring, they're kind of more one day all out races, which are just really fun to partake in. And then it kind of switches to longer races towards summertime, which is a whole different dynamic. And this year is going to be really interesting, obviously, because it's an Olympic year and Team USA has to select who they're going to take to the Olympics. And so I think everybody will come into the beginning of the season really, really fit to try to get that spot. And it'll be a really exciting first couple of months to try to sort that all out.
Are you going for the Olympics? Do you think that is that your goal?
I'm on the Olympic long list, and I would absolutely love to represent Team USA. It'd be such an honor and a privilege. And, you know, the Olympics is such an important event, and I would love to be able to take part in it. That said, there's also some incredibly prestigious races within the cycling world, like Strade Bianche or Flanders, or those just iconic races that have existed for almost 100 mm-hmm. years. And for me, I really want to be a well-rounded cyclist. I want to be able to compete and be competitive in all different kinds of races and really challenge for those top spots. And so I just want to focus on being the best cyclist I can be and focus on some goals of doing well in one day races within the season and not just have my eyes on, I'm going to sacrifice everything to go to the Olympics. I think that it's a real cyclist is able to handle a full season and be competitive multiple days of the year and not just show up to one race. And that's what I hope to continue to improve on and hopefully can put together a successful season this year.
That sounds really, really exciting. And it sounds like you have a good head on your shoulders to deal with, you know, not just the competitive races that you have in your regular season, but also just the pressure of it being an Olympic year. In addition to, you know, your daily cycling and your rides, what else do you do to train to prepare for your races?
That's a great question. We all do a lot of kind of stretching and yoga. You're kind of stuck in the same position for such a long time and using kind of the same muscles that I found I've had much less problems with injuries and overuse issues by just continually to move my body so nothing locks up or gets too tight in any way. And then we do some basic strength training. Some people use lots of weights in the gym. Some people just use their body weight, but something just to make sure you're making all of your muscles strong and nothing is kind of getting overcompensated. Nothing's overcompensating.
Emily, do you have any questions? You haven't spoken in a while, so I want to make sure that I'm not going too fast. And
No, I'm excited. I'm just really am glad that we're kind of talking about a sport that's not always highlighted. And Leia, I really hope that when those races come, we definitely want to feature those on Virago Project also. So even if you can like shoot us an email or tag us, because we want to really make sure that the mainstream sport, you know, the typical like Olympic sports that aren't just being highlighted on Virago Project, we're looking to have, you know, a diversity in all sense of, you know, athletes and things like that. So I'm really excited to learn more about the sport and kind of follow it and increase my IQ on it. So would you be able to send us some information or even articles or just a quick one-line email like, hey, this major race is coming up? Because honestly, I just don't know that much about cycling right now.
Absolutely. And what's really special about the beginning of the year in cycling is the races really are crazy and dynamic and just you never know what's going to happen. And they're really entertaining to watch. So I'll be sure to send you guys some information on them because they're pretty special. And yeah, I think that they can provide a lot of
context. Definitely. I'm with Emily. I feel like a lot more awareness about this sport is definitely needed in me, just in, you know, the mainstream college sports community. Cycling usually isn't an NCAA sport that we hear about. I'm not even sure if the NCAA has, you know, cycling on at any of their schools or rosters. You would know better, Leia, do they?
There are collegiate programs now, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, to be honest, since it wasn't there when I was in college. I don't know if it's actually NCAA or if it's just a separate thing. But I know that there's some pretty strong universities that have really solid cycling programs. And there are starting to be women athletes that are coming out of collegiate
love
cycling.
That, yeah.
But it has to be inclusive enough because a lot of people who join in college haven't ridden either, you know? So it's a little bit different than if you were in like football you've been playing.
So, Leia, I know that you were a teacher before you began your cycling journey, and I wanted to ask you what it was like when you made the decision to go from being a teacher to being a professional cyclist, and then, you know, if you made any other sacrifices when you decided to follow your dreams and pursue cycling full time.
When I was thinking about leaving teaching, I started to weigh different things. I absolutely loved cycling, and I also knew that there was a timeline on how long I could pursue this when I could still be competitive. And I knew I could be a teacher forever when I was done cycling, and felt like I owed it to myself to give it a try and to see where I would end up. And I never expected that I would end up in a place where I'd be living in Europe for most of the year and having all these great experiences. But I think my biggest sacrifice through all of that is just that I spend so much time away from my home and my friends and my family. And I've learned over the past couple of years of living in Europe how much I really rely on them for support and how much value they add to my life. And so I definitely think the biggest sacrifice is that time away from home.
Definitely. And so I played professional volleyball in Finland and then went to grad school in England. And it's just hard being away from home. I feel like on one hand, you know, there's the thrill of being abroad and living in Europe and having access to all of these different countries because it's so easy to travel. And, you know, it can be a very enriching experience to, you know, play professional sports overseas. But on the other hand, I would agree with you, and you know this better than I do at this point, you know, you're leaving behind your family, friendships, relationships, whatever it is. And it can definitely be a struggle. But you do race competitively also in the States, but I'm assuming that those races, you know, just aren't as competitive as the ones in Europe. Is that the case?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like most of the time when you first start your professional career, you start by racing in the United States. And then once you've kind of proven you're a good athlete, you've won some races, you kind of have a little bit of a track record, then generally a team in Europe will hire you and you'll go to Europe. That's kind of where all the big racing is and all the competitive people are.
That's awesome. So what would you say are like the top things that cycling has taught you about yourself?
I think number one is perseverance. This hasn't been an easy road. There've been moments when I've struggled. I've either gotten injured at a horrible time or sick at a horrible time or feel, you know, like it's just hard. And it's really taught me to get up time and time again and to keep pressing forward. And through that, I've continued to improve as an athlete and I think as a person. And it's really shown me that I'm capable of more than I ever thought I was. And it's kind of addicting in a way to see how far can I keep pushing that envelope? How much more can I do? What else? How else can I get better? What else do I need to be working on? And making each of those small gains and seeing how those small improvements add up to a big result later on is a really fun process to partake in.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about the process, right? That's what we hear. Last question, Leia. What advice would you give to athletes, younger athletes, or older athletes who are pursuing a dream, you know, taking the road less traveled, going a non-traditional route, and pursuing their athletic goals? What advice would you give to them?
Absolutely. I think then the really important part when you're going on these kind of off the beaten path roads is, one, you need to make sure you still love it. There's so many hard points in it. You're pushing your body really hard. You're away from home. You know, you're kind of just scrambling a lot of the time, it feels like, especially at first. And you need to make sure that you love what you're doing. And obviously, there's going to be times within that you're just worn down and frustrated. And I'm not talking about those times. But deep down, do you really love, for me, racing my bike? Is this something I really want to do? And I think making sure that that's the case, that you're doing it for you, is really important. Mm-hmm. I think the number two thing you should do is listen to your gut. And for example, starting for me, I really had to decide what team I thought would help me develop the most, what team had my best interests at heart. And I think all of those things are really much more important than the name of a team, mm-hmm. kind of the prestige of something. Really trying to listen and figure out what is the best option for you and not to be scared to go down that path. Mm.
Thank you, Leah, for sharing. Is there anything else you wanted just our listeners to know about the cycling community or about the sport in general?
I just hope more people get involved in the cycling community. It's such a unique place. And lots of my really, really good friends are from cycling and from group rides. And you know, all of them do different things. Some are engineers and some are professors and some are business people in other senses. And we're all united through this common activity. And it's really broadened my perspective and broadened the people I get to interact with. And I think that that is really awesome, just as much as it is to go out and push my limits and see new things. And to be able to combine the two is a really unique experience that cycling gives us.
Thank you. Thank you for your insight and for sharing your knowledge and your passion of cycling with us. I have never had such an in-depth conversation about the sport, and I'm excited for people to learn more about it. I'm excited for people to, you know, see a real life example, you and other cyclists out there, of people who, you know, maybe didn't do a sport for their entire lives, but, you know, became really, really good at it and like really, really enjoy it and have built an entire community around it. Cause I feel like that's so needed. Well, good luck with your season. Happy holidays and good luck traveling over there. And thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Bye guys.
Talk to you guys later. All right. Bye.
Okay, so that was absolutely awesome. Leah, if you're listening, thanks again for coming on and for sharing your experience with us. I think it's so, so important that women know that, you know, you don't have to go the traditional path, not in sport, not in life, and also just for shedding light on how cool of a sport cycling is. I really feel like I learned a lot, and who knows, maybe I'm going to go down to the bike shop and purchase a bike.
Right? After this interview, I looked up and joined a few Dallas cycling groups on Facebook to get some more information. I'm a little late on asking for that for Christmas this year, but I'm definitely going to look into the sport in 2021 because I think it's like a really good fit for especially my bad knees from volleyball. I feel like this will be a little less impact. So I'm excited to get more involved.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I had no idea you signed up for that. Look at you, all proactive, taking advice.
Trying to, gosh, I need a little community of still fitness people. That's how I do best. So I think that seems like a good individual, but still, like she said, community type.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. I loved that. She was like, oh, we just go for cycles and then we go to a coffee shop or like grab a beer.
Yep.
That sounds great. Like go for a bike ride, see some beautiful sights, get a coffee, get a beer and just hang out. Sounds awesome.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to another episode of Virago Pod. We will be back next week with more. Have a great first week of January.
Bye, guys.